All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast. First off, just apologies, I've got a cold, so I've got a pretty husky voice going on. I sound like Liam at the London 2012 Olympics. So, cool episode coming up today, as always, because it's a bloody good podcast. We'll be doing the news and we'll be doing an interview with Colin Paterson, BBC Entertainment correspondent and a very important person in the history of Oasis and various scandals and things that have happened. So that's really interesting quite entertaining. I really enjoyed speaking to Colin, so that was good fun. Plus, we are doing the latest installment of A to Z with A Bell Will Ring. We're finally into the A's. We've come out of the brackets and we're into the A's with A Bell Will Ring. It's the first song we'll be doing that was written by Gem Archer, so looking forward to that. But just to say, we've got a sponsor this week, which is the Nerdy Things podcast. So, guys, take it away.
Hello. Join the Nerdy Things podcast with me, Kevin, my co-host Jules,
Heyo.
And Tim.
What up?
Each week, as we give our thoughts on the week's news about comics, movies, games, and all things nerdy. Then we dive deeper into the week's main topic for things like time travel, cryptids, zombies, and blockbuster movies. Find Nerdy Things on iTunes, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So thank you to Nerdy Things for sponsoring, and make sure you guys are checking them out. And if you would like to sponsor, then do get in touch. Just drop me an email, oasispod@gmail.com, and we can make it happen. So before we get into the Oasis news, just one thing to say is that the British Podcast Awards are currently open for nominations. And I'm going to put the Oasis podcast forward for a few awards up there. So, so I think that should be good fun. I doubt we'll win because it's chosen by a panel of people. And when you look at the winners last year, it's like a lot of BBC ones were winners and things like that. So I've got a feeling that they typically go for the more big corporation ones. But you never know. We'll see. It's going to be good fun. We'll put it together. There is one Listener's Choice Awards. So once it's time to vote, I will definitely be calling on you guys to start clicking and voting. Because, how cool would it be if we can go and turn up at an award ceremony and actually win for the Oasis podcast? To be amazing. Probably not going to happen, but there we go. So anyway, I just thought I'd make you guys aware of that. In the world of Oasis news, it hasn't been a huge amount because I'm recording this on Saturday night and the last one was only on Tuesday, so there hasn't been loads of news, but there's been a little bit. Liam Gallagher, speaking of awards, has been nominated at the NME Awards for quite a few, and Noel is up for one. Noel's up for Best Festival Headliner, Liam's up for Solo Artist and Live Artist. Head on over to the NME Awards page and vote for them. They had the Grammy Awards over in the States, and the Oasis guys didn't win anything, but Greg Kurstin, who was the producer of As You Were, ended up winning Producer of the Year. It wasn't necessarily for As You Were itself. He also did the Foo Fighters and Beck this year as well. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. You can't argue with that, and fair play to Greg Kurstin. He won Producer of the Year. There's been a few more gigs announced. Probably the biggest one is that Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds are headlining BBC Radio 2 The Biggest Weekend in Scotland. So, across a weekend, there's going to be four different gigs around the UK. And, Noel is playing the Scottish one. That's 26th of May. And tickets go on sale on 12th of February at 8:30. And obviously, as always, I get my news from stopcryingyourheartoutnews.blogspot.co.uk. Just Google SCYHO and you'll find it. What's this next news story? Listen to the new episode of the Oasis podcast. Yes, fantastic. Thanks, Louise. When Noel went on Chris Evans to announce that, so he did a little interview with Chris Evans, which isn't massively interesting, but anyway, it's worth checking out if you want to. Liam's done a few more bits. He's going to be doing the Parklife Festival in Manchester. He's going to be doing Northside in June, which is in Aarhus, Denmark. He's going to be doing Stinman in July, which is in Lorach, Germany. Johnny Marr has recently done an interview talking about playing on Noel's album. He said, I liked his record. I played in a couple, but the song that ended up on the album is actually my favourite on the album. I was pleased about that. Love is the Law. I've never heard a rock song like it. It hangs together like nothing else. So that's interesting. And that was about it, really. The other couple of things that Louise sort of does on the Stop Crying Your Heart Out website, which is cool, is that we talk. She always mentions on this day in Oasis history, and yeah, and so basically on this day in Oasis history, Songbird was released in 2003 as a single. So yeah, it was quite cool. It's good to see. Just think about that. What's that? 15 years ago now. Crazy. Got to number 3 in the charts, and the first song not by Noel that had been released as a single. So let's have a little bit of Songbird.
Talking to the songbird yesterday, threw me to a place not far away. She's a little pilot in my mind, singing songs of love to pass the time. Gonna write a song so she can see, give her all the love she gives to me. Talk of better days that have yet to come. Never felt this love from anyone.
So let's go into this discussion with Colin Patterson. If you'd like to follow Colin on Twitter, he is at Colin G. Patterson. It's Patterson with one T. And at the start, we talk about this article he did, and if you look at my Instagram or Twitter or Facebook recently, then you will see I've posted that article. So that's really good. It's very cool because I don't think, as Colin says in the interview, that's ever been sort of made public ever, other than like if you happen to have bought that paper in Pennsylvania in 1994. So very cool to have like a bit of an exclusive as well. But anyway, let's have a little bit of Elvis Costello doing Radio Radio, because Colin is on the radio. And then it will be me in Media City in Salford talking to Colin Patterson.
They don't give you any choice, cause they think that it's treason. So you have better things you were told. You better listen to the riddle.
Okay, welcome to the Oasis podcast, Colin Patterson. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Very good.
Nice to meet you.
This is amazing. So normally where I record in Supernova Studios, which is basically my front room, with a pretty crappy setup, but where are we? Just tell people where we are right now, Colin.
Media City in Salford. This is Key House. This is where Five Live is. It's where BBC Sport is. It is a broadcasting powerhouse. And it's where you're on the floor where I actually work. I'm a BBC entertainment correspondent. Yeah. And yeah, I sit about 40 metres from here. I should be covering some big announcement Elton John is making in New York, but I've decided to sneak away and speak to you instead.
Well, I do really appreciate it. It's very, this is sort of where the modern world of podcasting meets the very staid. But actually, that's not fair, because Five Live, I'm here with my good friend Will Cooper, who podcast listeners will know that name as the guy that got me into Oasis originally back in 1994. And he's just saying one of his main jobs is podcasting. And actually, Five Live know what they're doing, and they're doing proper podcasting, which is absolutely fantastic. So yeah.
They'll steal this one away from you before long. Don't
exactly.
worry about that. And many Oasis stories have been broken on Five Live.
Yes, yeah. Well, Colin, so, I mean, it's really cool that you've just shown me this, like, what was it? Actually, your first ever piece of printed... Was this your first time you were ever in print?
No, no. Tom Jones was my first ever interview.
Okay.
But I was a student in America in 1994. I got to go and do a year at University of Pennsylvania and they did a newspaper. And I worked out that if I worked for the student paper, you could get access to all these British bands who were coming over to the States that no one was interested in, cared about. And I'd interview them for the University of Pennsylvania paper, the Daily Pennsylvanian, and then I'd sell them back to the British press.
Fantastic.
That's how I got into journalism.
Fantastic.
And the first interview I did that year was Oasis on their first ever US tour. They came to Philadelphia. They played a venue called J.C. Dobbs. It was a Sunday night, and it was absolutely packed. I got the set list up, actually, for you.
Oh, wow.
It was quite a traditional set list from the early days of Oasis.
Yeah.
When I saw the gig, I actually spent the next 4 days, I remember, thinking, I can't hear what anyone's saying. And on the Thursday, my ear suddenly went, and I thought, oh my word, I've been deaf because of that gig. It was incredibly loud. So they opened up with Rock and Roll Star, Columbia, Fade Away, Dixie's Diner, Shaker Maker, Live Forever, Bring It On Down, Up in the Sky, Slide Away, Cigarettes and Alcohol, Married with Children, Supersonic, and the traditional closer in those days, I Am the Walrus.
Fantastic.
Absolutely no encore. J.C. Dobbs is a pub on South Street in Philadelphia. It probably has about 250 people. Suede were touring. They played the bigger venue
down
the road.
Yeah,
they were a bigger deal than Oasis at the time.
In '94,
so I managed to blag this interview with Oasis through, they had a student plugger who'd come to you and offer you acts. And I was like, what British ones have you got? He's like, oh, there's some band called Oasis. Yes, I'll have them. I will have them.
So did you know at the time? Did you? Because the buzz was already...
Well, the debut album had come out in August. And I actually remember buying it the day before I moved to the States. It was the thing I had to do. I lived in Glasgow. I drove over to FOP on Byers Road and bought the CD on day of release. And I flew out on the next day to America listening to it on the plane on my CD Walkman.
Excellent.
That dates it.
Absolutely, great. And so not only did you get to see the gig, which, you know, has ruined your hearing, but then you actually got to sit down with them.
Got to sit down with them. So in traditional standard way, they foisted the bass player on me. I got a Gwigsy, but he was very good. And also, I was allowed to watch the sound check, and Liam left the stage and sat down and watched the sound check. And so I just went up to him. And I remember the way I thought I was going to ingratiate myself to them. It was the very early days of the internet. This is a true story. So I thought, they love Man City. I will print out the football results from Saturday's games and give them to them, but only if Man City won. And because then they'd be in a good mood. So I went, listen, I brought you the football results. And they were like, yeah, Nolan, we'll beat Spurs 5-2, which was, I had to check that. I remembered they'd won because I did hand them over. And then also I was asking them about, I think Brian Horton was the manager of Man City at the time. And this in-depth, but Liam gave me one quote that I, of course, started the article with. So I'll tell you about the headline later. This is the first quote. I won't do an impression. A year ago, I was on the dole in Manchester, spending my gyro, and then because there's America, they've got brackets. Unemployment check. The day I got it, and being nagged by my mum. Now, 12 months later, I'm a star. Is the arrogant claim of Liam Gallagher of the explosive British pop group Oasis. The turn in their lives really has been that quick.
And it was, because that's the whole thing about Supersonic. It was an insane rise, you know, probably the likes of which we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And we'll probably never see again because of the way that things tend to build with the internet now. You know, it does tend to take so much longer. But with that injection of money from Alan McGee having spotted them, and then suddenly, bang, you know, they are from nowhere to the biggest band in the country.
Well, they were so excited to be in the States at this time because they'd had all the number one success. The few days before, they had just played the Jon Stewart show.
Bye.
Dice. I remember them talking about that. They were on. So the people who were in the audience, it was, in fact, I think I sum up the audience later on. I give a sort of, here we go. Later that night, Oasis let their new record loose on an audience of students and alternative rock fans at JC Dobbs. One girl even brought her mum along. Anyway, their loud guitars, unforgettable melodies, and unmistakable Manchester vocals were greeted with a wild reception. They've gone down well, according to me. I like this bit, though. He goes, Liam oozed coolness, dealing with a girl's cry-off, I love you, with big deal, so does me mam. His brother Noel, the guitarist and songwriter, is equally unflappable, refusing to play their Christmas single because it's not Christmas yet, he says. I guess that must have been Whatever already.
Yeah, because Whatever had been, they'd done it on an MTV show. And so, you know, and so they played it on MTV, even though it wasn't on the album. And so they had this in the background that they knew and they were starting to promote it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they didn't play it. Yeah, crazy.
There's a really good quote as well I enjoyed from Googsy here when he says, right, I'm interviewing at the sound check. He says, we're not necessarily the best at playing our instruments. I mean, I can hardly play my guitar. Tony can't drum. Liam complains about his own singing. Noel will admit he is not the best guitarist in the world. And Bonehead says he just smashes on his guitar for fun. You don't have to be the best musicians to be great. I mean, Hendrix wasn't in the Beatles, but they were still the best band. It's when we come together, we're something different. And then at this time, the way they were spinning it in the States was definitely very much, are they the new Beatles?
Yes.
Or are they the new Sex Pistols? Yeah, yeah. I'm afraid when I picked up my copy to see what headline they'd gone for, I did go, oh, no. And the headline for this article is Sex Beatles.
But
there's a good quote down at the bottom where he says, Giggsy is not sure about the comparison with the Beatles and the Sex Pistols. The press can't decide if we're the new Beatles or the next Sex Pistols. I don't see how you can judge us next to the Beatles. With them, you have their whole career to look at, their progression to Sgt. Pepper's and beyond. It's our first album, so to compare us to the Beatles, look at their debut. Our first album is better than the Beatles' first album. Well, I think he's got a point.
I think you can argue that.
Please Please Me versus Definitely Maybe.
I would go Definitely Maybe.
I would genuinely go Definitely Maybe. Maybe. If you want to put this up anywhere, people are welcome to.
That's great.
It's not BBC property. Some of my other stuff is, but it's a bit of a collector's item now.
That's fantastic.
Probably
that
no one. I wonder if anyone has ever read this, because at the time, no one would have been interested in it.
Well, that's, and especially as well, I mean, at the time you was obviously, oh, the bass player. But actually, Gwiggs did so few interviews.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was very, very rarely did an interview. I'm surprised you got more than about 6 words out of him.
He was quite chatty here. I'll give you one last one then. Here we go. He's talking about their celebrity fans. Evan Dando is a top bloke. Liam thinks he is John Waters on acid. I'm kind of impressed that Liam knows who John Waters is, the film director. He's excellent on his own and just with an electric. I hate the Lemonheads, though. We've told them to leave them, but he won't listen. Is this true?
Yeah, they were mates with Evan Dando. He was a bit of a hanger-on with them. I think he noticed that they were cool, because Lemonheads were pretty massive at the time. They'd done the Miss Robinson cover. And Evan Dando was a bit of a superstar at the time. Because I just want to fly lately. Did you ever feel the pain? Morning rain as it soaks you to the bone. Lately I just want to fly, want to live, don't want to die. Maybe I just don't believe, maybe I just want to breathe. Maybe you're the same as me.
We see things they'll never see. You and I can live forever.
Now I'm reading this all, he's actually getting quite rude. Yeah. I think he must have relaxed. It must have been those football results I gave him. He describes Suede's Brett Anderson as a middle-class kid who pretends he's working class to sell records. And then the Stone Roses, old men whose new record sounds like Rare Groove. Because the Second Coming must have just been... Oh, so Love Spreads would be out. Love Spreads had just come out. Yeah, and then this would be a couple of months before the Second Coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, old men. Old men. Love Spreads sounds like Rare Groove. So how old would they have been then? Well, probably in the 30s.
Only early 30s, I think, yeah. Yeah, because they were a bit old. I think they were sort of mid to late 20s when the debut album came out. But yeah, that's so funny, old men.
Yeah.
You know, and Noel's still going at, what, 51, but... You know, that is crazy. That was then your catapult to superstardom, was it, that interview?
That's right. Genuinely, it helped me get jobs when I came back. So I interviewed Oasis, Suede. I got into an Elastica gig once by pretending it was sold out. And I just went, but I'm the drummer. And they let me in because they probably knew there was an English guy who drummed. Yeah, and thought, well, bald Scottish guy's close enough.
That'll do.
Let him in. So that really helped me when I came back, actually, get work experience at places and did help. So I have a lot to thank Oasis for.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And so when's the next run in with Oasis then, Colin? Because I know you've basically been there, well, just as your main role as a correspondent for this stuff. Obviously, they're always in and out, so you would have been covering them.
I was
throughout.
So lucky. Yeah. So I was born in 74, so I was 20 when Definitely Maybe came out. Perfect. And I genuinely think 94 is the best year for music in my lifetime. Absolutely sensational year, because you Definitely Maybe, you Park Life, you did Ill Communication by the Beastie Boys, you had, I think you Dummy by Portishead as well, Music for the Jilted Generation by the Prodigy. And I don't think there's that stat, isn't there, that everyone thinks the best year was when they were 21. Yeah. I was 20, and I'm going for 94. But that is a good year. Well, compare that to this year's Mercury Prize. Come on.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I do wonder if it is a case of, well, we were young then, and when people look back at 2017, they will think. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. I don't think people are looking back at 2007 and going, what a classic year that was. You know, and we're 10 years away from that. I think it was just that it is so fractured now, you know, over the last 10-15 years with the internet. It's so fractured, it's not going to be like that ever again.
And people still want Oasis so badly. I went to see the Cortinas when they played that gig at Old Trafford the week of the Manchester bomb. It was a really emotional gig, and I would say I saw over 500 Oasis t-shirts that night at a Cortinas gig. I mean, I wonder how they feel about that. And when I went to see Liam when he played the Ritz at the gig in Manchester, the first gig after the bomb. I think the Cortinas were on the Saturday and Liam was on the following Tuesday, but it was like one of Manchester's biggest sons returning, and it was his first solo gig. So many Oasis t-shirts, and anytime an introduction sounded like the beginning of Oasis song, people would be up. Oh no, it's one of the new albums.
It's a new one.
It's one of the new albums.
So when's your next sort of meeting with Oasis then after the American one?
Oh, so then one of my first jobs was working on The Big Breakfast. If you remember that on Channel 4.
Here's the man behind the master plan. We've been awaiting his arrival with mounting enthusiasm and excitement all morning. Welcome to my shed, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, there we go! Welcome to shed, Noel. Listen, I didn't think that was a bad video.
No.
Because you have slagged it, haven't you?
Yeah, no. Well, I was in a conversation with somebody in America, and I said I was having a conversation about the genre of videos themselves, and it sort of came out that I was slagging the video off, and the director of the video since got the needle with us, and he's very upset. But I mean, I don't like any videos. So I just think they're a waste of money.
Yeah, it's just a complete waste of money.
Well, I mean, you stand in a field in the middle of November trying to look. I mean, could we look any colder in that video?
Well, no, I tell you, but it gets ridiculous. I mean, I think the most ridiculous thing is, like, you take Bryan Adams. Everyone knows you can't work an electric guitar in a forest. And you get to a little glade where there's a drummer waiting. I mean, and a grand piano by a castle.
Absolutely.
It's rubbish. But you know, the actual video, as videos go, it's all right.
I mean, I think with videos, as long as the singer looks good and the song comes across well, I mean...
Yeah, but as long as the singer looks good, it's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Do you think Liam looked good in that?
I do think he looked good
in that, great. He's become quite a style icon. Does that shock you?
No, he's always been the focal point of the band, and I suppose kids, especially, young kids, find him to look dangerous and cool, which...
They do. They find him to look dangerous and cool. Okay. Yeah. Have you, while we're in the shed, do you own a shed? Are you an owner shed?
I've got a shed, yeah. Well, it's a big shed. It's just, yeah.
How big are you talking?
I'm talking stables, mate.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's the Palisade Windsor.
It's almost like a shed housing estate type thing.
Really? Do you spend much time there?
Well, no, because I've got a little old man that looks after my garden and stuff like that, and he sort of lives in the shed.
You've got a man living in a shed? Oh, are you sure he lives there?
Well, every morning when I get up, he's there, and every night when I go to bed, he's there.
He lives there. He lives there. Right? Yeah. He's making out, he's got a house to go to, but he lives in that shed.
Absolutely, yeah, totally.
And round about the time of the fourth album, Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, there was a big meeting between the record company and the Big Breakfast, and the decision was made that the Big Breakfast would have access to that Oasis world tour, and we would visit them constantly, and then the whole thing would be turned into a live DVD made in conjunction between Oasis and the Big Breakfast.
Oh, wow.
I was the guy tasked with doing this. I was really young, and this was quite a big deal. So they said, listen, just treat it as separate news reports, and then we'll see what we can get. So the first one I got was March. Is that when it came out? March 2000.
Go Let It Out came out,
and
then the album.
I went to the album launch party the night before. I flew out to Japan with Oasis. These were the days when the record industry. I remember going to the launch party of Standing on the Shoulder of Giants and doing interviews with people and asking Kelly Jones from Stereophonics. I went, "What have Oasis got?" And he went, "Well, they're just AC/DC. Every song sounds the same, but it's a great song." That was my memory of that party. So the next day, I had to fly to Japan with the band. I had to meet them at Heathrow and do those shots of Liam pushing the trolleys through.
Okay, yeah.
And do you remember? It was at the time where Robbie Williams had been their great mate at Glastonbury,
yes.
Danced on stage to Shaker Maker in 95. I was at that gig as well. I didn't spot Robbie at the time. Only in retrospect did I learn that the fat dancer from Take That was up there. Then they fell out, and then there was the whole Liam dating Nicole aspect.
Yeah.
At this time, when Standing on the Shoulder of Giants came out, Robbie Williams sent a wreath. And on that, do you remember this?
Yeah, I remember.
And on this wreath,
I had forgotten about that.
On this wreath, it said, "To Noel Gallagher, R.I.P. Heard your latest album, My Deepest Sympathies." And this was the
which is actually very funny from Robbie.
Which was funny. So at the airport, I said to Liam, "So you're flying to Japan. What are the chances of you sending Robbie Williams a postcard?" And he looked straight into the camera and went, "You can tell that." Very bad word, Cambridge University netball team, that if I see him anywhere, I'm going to break his nose. I'm angry about this, and you're a dead man, or something like that. So I then gave the tape to the runner, who took this back to the Big Breakfast.
We have got gold.
Absolute gold. Flying on the plane, thinking, what are they going to do with this? The Big Breakfast led with it the next day. We arrived, got off the plane in Japan. It was the very early days of mobile phones. The PR's like switching on his brick and the thing is going ballistic because while we've been on the plane to Japan,
it's broken. Yeah,
and so it was the lead story. It was all, you know, Liam challenges Robbie to a fight. And you'll remember, so this is February 2000, 3rd of March. Robbie Williams stands up at the Brits, having won an award, and goes £100,000 a year.
£100,000
of your money. Anytime, any place, anywhere.
Would anybody like to see me fight Liam?
At the Brits, Robbie Williams decides to use an acceptance speech as a unique and fairly public platform to ask Oasis frontman Liam Gallagher for a scrap.
Liam, £100,000 of your money, £100,000 of my money. We'll get in the ring and we'll have a fight. And you can all watch it on TV. What do you think about that?
Well, if he rises to the challenge, what are you going to do?
I'll fight him.
So, I caused that. And I'd left the Oasis tour by the actual time of the Brits.
Okay.
But Noel told me at a later date, Liam went absolutely crazy when that Brits happened. I think there was a foot through a TV in Japan when that happened.
Fantastic.
So that was good fun. But I got to walk around Tokyo with them. We went to a Beatles shop, which only sold Beatles and Oasis memorabilia.
Really?
It was just quite extraordinary. Photos of them and Man. They sold Man City shirts in the shop, in this market.
In Tokyo.
And we took them around and they tried out guitars, I mean, in the guitar shop. And then I got to interview them both in sort of a Japanese garden in the hotel. I remember that Liam was very obsessed with the Big Breakfast newsreader at the time. He kept saying, hello to Phyllis Gale. Remember Phil Gale, who used to host the Big Breakfast News?
Yeah.
I think the Big Breakfast was a big deal in those days.
Massive, absolutely.
But so I got to go and see them at the Yokohama Arena that night, 29th of February 2000. I looked up the set list for
that.
Done my research.
So we've got a very different set list now. This is a very different band.
Post
Gwigs and Bones. So were you just with Noel and Liam at that time, or were the other guys? Was Gem and, because Gem and Andy are in, but
they were. I was going to do interviews with them later in the tour. I got to interview them once more in Hamburg. I went over and interviewed them there, but after that, everything kicked off in Oasis. I think it was actually the beginning of them starting to fall apart, and we had all access to the tour revoked. The Big Breakfast Oasis documentary.
Didn't happen.
It strangely didn't happen. You will not find that anywhere on YouTube. It got to Japan and it got to Hamburg. In fact, it wasn't the time that Liam got into the fight in Hamburg. It wasn't that time.
No, that was a different time.
But something was going terribly wrong.
Yeah.
You'll know this better than me. There was something going terribly wrong on that tour.
Well, things are always within about 5 minutes of going terribly wrong with the two of them. It's always, from the very early interviews, there's a very famous, their first feature in the NME, and they are tearing up a hotel and it's madness, But so there's always that. But I think in the later years, it just became the nastiness. There was always that banter. But then, from a brutal fight, then they'd be hugging each other. Whereas that resentment started to breed in at that point. And then it's separate, traveling separately and separate hotels. And then, and just not seeing each other. Like The Who, they all turn up in separate cars, do the thing they had to do, then go separately, And I think that's really a lot of why we all loved Oasis in the early, years was because of that gang mentality. There's five lads, council estate, and they were behaving like we would have behaved if we've suddenly had all the money in the world and that opportunity. And they were mates and they dressed like us and they were just, by the time you then get, they're separate cars and separate planes and even Gem and Andy coming in, these are now seasoned musicians and they're good musicians. Like going back to what you're saying about Gwigsy, Andy Bell, a fantastic guitar player, is sitting on bass, And so it's just the dynamic of the band changed. We're not like the council estate lads who made it good anymore. This is now the rock stars tearing each other apart. And I think that's why a lot of that appeal left them. But yeah, and it's interesting to hear it from,
that I did have the access totally revoked. Do you want to hear the set list for
So this is
the 29th of February 2000 in Japan. Unbelievably polite audience. No jumping up and down.
They
open up with Go Let It Out.
Yeah.
As they were doing those that was about it.
This next one is called Where Did It All Go Wrong?
Tour t-shirt from that tour, green v-neck with just a tiny little Oasis logo there. Who Feels Love, Supersonic, some might say. Do you know what I mean? It's the only time they played Do You Know What I Mean on that tour.
Really?
Apparently. That's what it says according to Setlist FM. Acquiesce, Sunday Morning Call, Gas Panic, Roll With It, Stand By Me, Wonderwall, Cigarettes and Alcohol with Whole Lot of Love Ending,
yeah.
Don't Look Back in Anger, Live Forever, Champagne Supernova, and an encore. The encores had come in by this stage,
yeah,
compared to the early J.C. Dobbs gig.
Yes.
We got Rock and Roll Star.
Rock and Roll Star at the end.
Rock and Roll Star, yeah.
See, this is the tour that then is captured on the Familiar to Millions when they played Wembley Stadium. So that is then. And what's quite interesting at that point is, yeah, you do then have proper musicians coming in. So hence, Cigarettes and Alcohol, they go into this Whole Lot of Love jam at the end, you know, which... You know, God bless Bonehead and Griggs, that wasn't what they were doing. They're recreating the record and just about managing to do that. Whereas then once you've now got proper musicians in, you've got Gem and Andy both doing different things and interweaving. So it became more of a proper live band show rather than just...
I remember Alan White was very much on board, I think, yeah. by then, because I was chatting to him saying, oh, so when I do the feature on you later in the tour, what are your interests? And he went, how about filming me having a round of golf?
That's interesting.
Perhaps I should have known that things were going to go wrong
yes.
there.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I remember also when I was in Tokyo, there was one other journalist with me, Dominic Moen of The Sun.
Oh, from The Sun, okay, yeah.
I don't think Oasis were so pleased.
No, they probably wouldn't
that he
have
was
been.
Around. I remember Liam saying, I went to the toilet and he followed me in. So, yeah, but they were really nice. They took me for a Japanese meal and all that kind of thing. I've still got, there was a set of drinks coasters they gave you at the end of the meal and Noel just gave me his. So I've still got drinks coasters.
Noel's drinks coasters
from Japan. I'm not sure how much they'll be worth, yeah.
Is that when you, like, move house and you think, why have I got drinks? Oh, yes. But, you know, do I keep these? Do I throw them away?
So this is professionally, but in my personal life, I'd seen them quite a lot of times. By then, I was living in Scotland at the time. So instead of Nebworth, I did the Loch Lomond. It was the previous weekend, wasn't it? It was the warm-up for it. My abiding memory of that gig, well, two things as well. It was the death at Loch Lomond, which was big news in Scotland, I remember. On a happier note, I remember when I walked into that gig, the first thing I saw at Loch Lomond was a man with a bucket of paint and a brush, and the sign said, Nolan Liam Monobrows, £1.
That's very Scottish.
Enterprising. Very enterprising. I think I was there. Black Grape, I think, might have been the support that night.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so...
Great. And then going on from 2000, well, is there... Obviously, there's the big thing, which was about 10 years ago now.
Yes.
So, which is... a rather controversial comment that Noel made about Glastonbury. So
I think
go on,
this,
take it.
This is my biggest contribution to the history of Glastonbury, of Oasis. Well, and Glastonbury,
well,
the whole lot.
It's a big moment. You know.
I got lucky. This is actually the story I'm proudest of in my whole career, probably. This and commentating live in the Oscars last year when they got the envelope wrong.
That was a heck of
a moment.
Yeah.
So to explain the full story, it's 2008 and I'm out covering the Oscars, actually. There is an Oscars link. A guy I know from going to Scotland football matches, Gordon Smart, was an up-and-coming showbiz journalist at the time and he was already genuinely like good mates with Noel and I knew Gordon through going to Scotland games. And we phoned each other and we were both in LA and he went, all right, where are you staying? I was like, the Roosevelt. And he was like, I'm there with Noel Gallagher. And I was like, can I come? And he was like, yeah, I guess so. So I joined Gordon Smart, Ali Ross, who's another Scotland football mate of mine, he's the Sun's TV critic, and Noel Gallagher. And we sat there in the Roosevelt Hotel the day before the Oscars. And basically, I've got about 5 funny stories. I gave him my 5 stories, and we got on well that day. And
but had he remembered you from these other various times he'd met him?
Vaguely, I think. When I meet him, it's not like we're best mates. I decided I wasn't going to interview him that day. He was off duty. He was on... I can't remember if he was recording an album. Were Oasis out there recording an album?
When are we talking about 2008?
This is 2008.
And this is in... Sorry, what city is it? LA?
LA, for the Oscars.
Yeah, so they're recording the last album. Yeah.
Right, that's exactly why he's there then. So I thought, he's off duty, I'm not going to interview him, I'll get something better the next time if I don't. So we had a fantastic afternoon. He told some great stories that probably we don't have time to go into. One which ends up with Paul Weller coming into the room with a baby's bottle that I still remember. So I tell it, I'm kind of blowing the punchline
now.
No,
please, I'll cut that out.
No, Gallagher goes on holiday with Paul Weller and they have the most riotous party. and no one wakes up in the morning and looks around. Every glass in the whole place is smashed, and he thinks, well, thank goodness I don't have to do any more drinking today because there is actually nothing to drink from. At which point, Paul Weller walks into the room with a baby's bottle in his mouth. That was the only receptacle he could find. So
that's fantastic.
I told Noel my best story at the time I interviewed Michael Jackson that okay. we definitely will not be going into okay, this time, but that was how I won his heart. So this is a convoluted story. So a few months later, it is, let me get the dates actually right.
See, I think, Colin, you might be my first guest to actually have notes. This is right. fantastic.
Good.
You
know, good.
It's a professional journalist. Right. That's the difference.
We're going back to April 2008. So the Oscars are in February 2008. We're now April 2008. And it is the premiere of Flashbacks of a Fool, which is a film directed by Bailey Walsh, who did the Unfinished Sympathy video for Massive Attack.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He also did the Lord Don't Let Me Slow Down tour film for Oasis, the Let There Be Love video. So this is a film very few people have seen. Daniel Craig plays a washed-up actor. Felicity Jones from Rogue One is in it as well.
Right.
And on the sheet, you get a tip sheet when premieres are happening, and it said, oh, Noel Gallagher will be there. And I thought, do you know what? He probably actually will be, because
they've done the work together.
He'll go and support him. So in my head, my plan's already thinking about what? Noel is one of my favourite interviewees.
Yeah.
Ask him on any topic. Everyone knows this, but ask him on any topic.
He'll
it's brilliant. So I thought, right, what are the big news issues of the week? Oh, yeah, Glastonbury tickets have gone on sale this week. Jay-Z's headlining, and they haven't sold out.
First time
I'll ask
ever.
him about that. He arrived, and I was like, he was like, oh, hello, because it's 2 months since. So I think he kind of relaxed. And I said, hey, you ask a couple of questions about the film to be polite, and then you come in with the big one of, listen, I was just wondering, as a band who's, I think, about the headline Glastonbury twice by that stage, who's headlined Glastonbury, why hasn't it sold out this year? And then came the best answer I've ever had in my career, and just went, wow. And there was a pause in that. No way. You're thinking, some gold's coming.
Come on,
no. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Jay-Z, Glastonbury, hip-hop, I'm not having that. No way. And he talked about how sometimes there'd be a curveball with Kylie Minogue being booked to play. And he went, I'm never sure about that. But hip-hop, no way. I'm absolutely not having that. No chance.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you start going to break it, people ain't going to go. Sorry, but Jay-Z, no, I'm not having hip-hop at Glastonbury. No way, man.
And it was one of these moments where you're like, please let this have recorded. And it had recorded. And it was, I remember I was going round to my brother's to watch the last night of the Masters golf. And I arrived at his and I was like, I think I've just got the best story of my life. And I was editing it on my computer and sending it into Five Live. And I was going, listen, honestly, this is huge. Now, to be fair on them, they did run it as a story the next morning, but they didn't make it the phone-in or anything like that. I've still got the original interview. Sheila Fogarty interviews me, and we run the interview, and then Nicky Campbell tells a story about meeting Noel, because he was the other presenter, Noel Gallagher in the street. The only thing you could think of to say to him was, nice gear, which he always tells. If you ever hear Nicky Campbell talking about Oasis,
he'll tell you that
story.
Okay.
It kind of went quite big, but we didn't make the most of it. The Asian Network, hour-long phone-in, one extra hour-long phone-in, the next day in the papers,
hip-hop
Glastonbury, Noel v Jay-Z.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was absolutely huge. NME, I think, put it on their cover, maybe. I mean, it was genuinely a big, big news story, and it was exciting being in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But then, 2 weeks before Glastonbury, I got the phone call. On my desk, my phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and this guy went, is it the acquisitions unit of the BBC? And I went, yes. And he went, and Mr. JZ's people have just phoned wanting to license your interview for Glastonbury. And I was like, yes. Yes, they can.
Please.
I don't care what my boss would say.
I'll pay them.
They're having it. And so that I did not know what was going to happen, but I get to cover Glastonbury every year, and I think it was one of my favourite moments ever because there was such a sense of anticipation around that. Would Jay-Z manage to pull it off? What would he do? And I knew he would probably do something with the interview. And if you were there, this was never shown in TV because they couldn't clear the footage. The lights went down on the main stage. The screens came up either side of the stage, and there was a video Jay-Z had made, and it started off with just Jay-Z, Glastonbury, hip-hop, I'm not having that. They really milked it too much. They had like the introduction to All You Need Is Love playing and all these vox pops with people and politicians around the world giving their opinion on it. They really milked it too much. It was about 2 minutes worth.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you start going to break it, people ain't going to go. Sorry, but Jay-Z... No, I'm not having hip-hop at Glastonbury. No way, man. No.
I think that Noel Gallagher definitely has a point.
Do not tell me it has to be this way.
JD? Never heard of him. Is it a pop group?
It's a nightmare, isn't it?
This is one step closer to equality.
Fantastic.
Noel Gallagher, you've had your time. Give it to somebody else.
Bollocks, how about that?
My advice is, let's keep our cool. Соответствующими указами
президента Российской Федерации. Shame on you. Shame on you.
Glastonbury and Jay-Z as like Jam and Marmite.
Hey.
It's really scary, really exciting at the same time.
We're very excited to be at this festival.
He's the best rapper of all time. I think he'll knock it out of the park.
I only pray I'll be proved wrong.
You know what the fuck I mean. I quite like the idea of Jay-Z headlining the show.
Fantastic.
Great for the people that have turned out tonight.
I'm particularly happy.
Para violar la soberanía de un país.
How do you mosh to Jay-Z?
This is one of these existential questions that everybody keeps posing.
Absolutely wonderful. It's about time.
Respect.
Everybody who's been responsible for this.
This is the nearest thing to a gig.
It'll change your world.
We need somebody who is
ready to go.
I am ready.
I wish you all every success.
Fantastic.
Tragedy.
Dreadful idea.
Wonderful. It's about time.
Amazing.
Jay-Z. Fucking no chance.
And they also used other interviews I'd done. I'd got Gwyneth Paltrow's reviews on it because I interviewed her shortly. And at that time, she was big mates with Jay-Z.
Okay.
Her going, Noel doesn't know what he's talking about. Jay-Z's going to smash it out of the park. So there's this big video. And I was just standing there going, my interview is headlining Glastonbury.
This
is really weird. I was just stood there in the middle of this field
with my arms up.
Yeah, it felt like that. Going, I am never going to headline Glastonbury. This is as good as it's going to get. And then... at the end of that film, they've replayed it and just went, Jay-Z at Glastonbury, I'm not having that. No chance. And one thing I do not understand, they managed to get the swearing version of that interview. When I broadcast it, I'd cut out
the swearing.
I, to this day, do not know how they got. I have a hunch Joe Wiley was involved.
Really?
If you ever interview Joe Wiley for this podcast, please ask her if she had a role in the Jay-Z at Glastonbury. Because I can't remember why. I think I met her. She had a twinkle in her eye about it. And I wonder if she helped them get
the
audio.
The raw audio is be on a server somewhere.
Somewhere. Joe, if you're listening and I'm wrong, I'll take it back. It was really cool, though. And I'm really, really glad you did. So I'm standing there in the field with my arms aloft. And then on walks Jay-Z.
Jay-Z with a guitar.
With a guitar, singing along to the record of Wonderwall spectacularly badly.
Very badly.
So much has been said about this performance in the lead-up. All that talk means nothing. It is game time for the rapper from Marcy Projects in Brooklyn. Throughout his entire career, he has established himself as the greatest rapper of all time living today. And tonight, he is headlining the Pyramid Stage at Glastonbury. We've been told to expect very strong language from this performance, so please be aware of that. Otherwise, we're going to give it to you in full. Jay-Z, Glastonbury 2008!
Hold on. Let it be the words to get the fire in our desires.
But the atmosphere was fantastic. Yeah. The crowd boomed along, and he had won Glastonbury. Yeah. He had won Glastonbury by coming along and playing a Five Live interview.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
it's a it. Secret. Kanye, why didn't you run one of my interviews? You might have gone down better.
The thing I remember, and I watched that, and that moment was fantastic, but then my issue with it after that, I think that he was so intent on just saying, no, I'm going to do my thing. I'm not going to, because people are going to say, is Beyonce going to be there?
Yes.
Is there going to be a backing band? Is there going
to be Rihanna Umbrella, people thought.
Yeah, exactly. Or like maybe like The Roots would come because he'd done the Unplugged album with The Roots and as a live band. No, just him, backing tracks. And then, you know, I think there might have been a couple of guests very, very briefly, but... No, and he just did it his way. And to be fair to him, it was a really remarkable performance.
It was a groundbreaking moment. My other abiding memory of that Glastonbury is because I was having to cover Jay-Z, I was thinking about who could I get to interview, and I saw Tim Westwood walking through backstage, and I ran up to him and went, Tim, you're at Glastonbury. Your thoughts? And he went, man, I've just walked by the main stage. There's a man on there called James Blunt, and he is well dreary.
That was a very good Westwood. I miss Westwood.
Yeah.
I miss Westwood.
The big dog.
Yes.
Like the Gallagher brothers, he knows how to be interviewed.
Perfect. But the thing, the great thing I love about Westwood was that, you know, we would kind of have a bit of a laugh about it because, you know, he did do that like fake sort of B-boy kind of accent. But then actually when Eminem would come over, he'd go and see Westwood. Like, you know, and that was it. So
he always got
like,
them. He always got them from the Capitol days. Yeah.
So whoever, like, you know, Moyles on Radio 1 would get the exclusive or whatever. But then they'd just turn up for Westwood show in the evening, like, no, with no fanfare. They were just there, whether it's Snoop Dogg or who, all the top. And it was like, yeah, this guy, as much as people didn't, you know, people might have had a bit of a joke about the fact that he was, you know, middle-aged kind of son of a vicar, I think he might have been.
That's right. Yeah. Wore a black tracksuit to his dad's funeral.
God bless him. That's fantastic. Yeah, Westwood, where are you, man? But, well, that's brilliant. That's so cool to hear, Colin. And then, so what happens after that? Any more run-ins with
them? Can you
believe
that's 10 years ago?
That's shocking.
The 10th anniversary.
It's crazy.
What happened to my career?
I think you're doing okay, mate. You're doing all right. You're not doing a podcast. So I think we're doing okay.
I kept running into them over the years. I've always enjoyed interviewing them. I'd often... because a lot of my work is for Five Live, and often get Noel on chatting about sport. You'd phone him up and get him on for every time Man City. I remember interviewing him when Robinho signed for Man City and just how excited he was by that. Yeah.
That was a big moment. That was a big step.
I remember getting him again on Glastonbury once as well when we were going through the lineup. And he was moaning about the lineup again and then went, actually, there's one act on here I quite like, Shakin' Stevens. I suppose the whole double denim thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's had.
But was he a bit more reticent after that? Did he? Because I get the impression that Noel's the sort of person that remembers things and maybe like. But was he okay with you after that, or did he? Or does he just think brilliant? You know, you got me a lot of publicity.
For a while, I remember I once met him. He introduced me to Sarah, and he went, "Colin's the guy who did the Jay-Z interview," and she went, "That was you." Thinking, okay, this has been talked about, but no, he's been pretty charming over the years. He loves being interviewed.
Yeah,
he does love being interviewed. Yeah. There's so few pop stars as good as him. One of my slightly self-aggrandizing story here: 2012 Olympics. I've been brought in at the last minute by Five Live to do I've been doing a lot of roving reporting during the Olympics. Brought in the last moment to do the closing ceremony of the Olympics. Got the programme. I've got the running order, which no one knows.
Mm.
And I see that Liam is on.
Yeah, BDI.
Immediately before the Spice Girls. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty funny. I'm walking around the stadium because I got my accreditation so late, I'm only going to be allowed in if the stadium's not full. It's the last Saturday.
Really?
So the last Saturday of the Olympics, the day before the closing ceremony. Yeah. I'm walking around the stadium, filling time for an hour before, and I heard this guy going, "Colin!" And I looked over, and it was Noel Gallagher.
Wow.
So I walked over to him, and I went, "Hello." And he went, "Oh, yeah, Sarah's in the toilet. Can you chat to me?" Because he must be so used to people just coming over.
If he's on his hassled. Own, yeah, people are
so
hassling.
So I said, "Well, I've got better chat for you than I normally do. Do you want to know where Liam's playing in the closing ceremony?" And when I told him it was before the Spice Girls, he was punching the air. But brilliantly, while we were chatting, a woman came over and went, "Oh, I'm sorry, do you mind if I interrupt?" And I kind of stepped back and went, "No, you must be used to this. And she went, oh, no, no, and turned around and said, just wanted to thank you for your Olympics coverage on Five Live. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant.
And walked off, not acknowledging Noel Gallagher. What? You're chatting to the wrong guy here. So that was a good moment in life.
What was your impression of Wonderwall at the Olympics?
Oh, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
David Arnold did a new string arrangement for it.
Yeah,
so
I heard that, yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but it was good. It's all right.
Yeah, I read that. The quote Enemy had about you was that you just kept them waiting until the last minute. You
were, yeah. That's, I just did that for the crack, though.
I'm sure you did. This, it seemed like this weird clandestine meeting of, like, we need your song, we're not going to tell you why or where.
Yeah. There was a lot of bullshit surrounding that. Like, yeah. Nobody was allowed to say anything, you know what I mean? Or I would have had to sign a confidentiality agreement and not even told my family. And I was
really? It's just like, I'm popping out on Sunday.
Yeah,
now.
It's yeah. Like, I'm going
on the BBC.
Yeah, I'm going on Sunday. Just, what's the closing ceremony at 9 o'clock? Yeah, so there was all that shit. And in the end, I was like, you know what? I'm better off out of this. I don't really...
Yeah.
It was great, don't get me wrong. I sat and watched it and I thought it was great. I thought BDI were great.
Yeah.
And I'm glad Oasis in some way was represented in it.
Because it seemed like everything else, with every other major significant part of the British popular culture.
I'm glad somebody did it. If they hadn't have done it, they'd have got fucking keen to do it or something, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So at least it was Liam and the lads. So I was cool.
So that was a different day. So because that's the other thing that we just don't know, and it's still a big mystery, is have the brothers been in touch, you know, because from that day in Paris when they had some sort of fight, whether fruit was thrown or whether guitars were thrown, we still don't know for definite. It's who you believe. But so that day, you know, they're at least within a postcode of each other.
They're at the same Olympic stadium, but Noel's very much there to see the athletics.
Okay.
I don't think he came back the next day to see BDI before the Spice Girls.
Well, and BDI, that was a phenomenally bad performance of Wonderwall.
Oh, the whole closing ceremony was
pretty poor.
Absolutely appalling.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there was anything good in it. I think I remember, did Russell Brand not pop out of a mushroom and singing the Beatles?
He was doing I'm the Walrus and he had some weird, some bizarre thing.
But the opening was amazing and the closing one
was, rubbish,
was more the Kaiser Chiefs doing the Who and Scooters. And everyone thought Kate Bush was going to perform and they thought Bowie was going to perform. And in fact, it was just the records that played.
Yeah. And Kate Moss came. That was it. A Bowie record played. And Kate Moss just walked up and
fashion,
down.
Fashion, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then running up that hill played.
But no, I mean, you hear the audio of that, of BDI doing Wonderwall, and it's probably Liam's worst ever performance. His voice was just completely shot at that time. And it's like, when you hear him to doing Wonderwall now, you know, he's just completely shot. It's the example of, this is the worst his voice went. Mm. But yeah, that's... But yeah, there you go. That's crazy. So Noel was very pleased.
Noel was very pleased.
He's basically...
I can't remember who was before or after. Don't shout at me if I've got it wrong. It was either like before or after the Spice Girls. I think it was the support act of the Spice Girls. And that's why it's so funny. But one very special time that I got to speak to Noel was when Man City won the league.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew he was not at the game because he was in tour at Chile at the time.
Okay.
I could not believe that he had organised a tour for the very time where City could have won the league. Why?
Yeah.
So I managed to get him on the phone that night from Chile. So I remember coming into work. I watched the game in a pub and then came into work and managed to track him down, get him on the phone. And he gave me some good quotes. I was looking them up today. The Enemy's reporting of my interview was, I blubbed like a little girl. That's quite good. Noel Gallagher has opened up about his reaction to his beloved Man City winning the Premier League, revealing he cried like a girl. And then it goes on to say, speaking to the BBC, Gallagher described his feelings when the team went from being 1-0 up to 2-1 down. He said, we arrived in Santiago. A friend of ours opened his bar early so we could watch it. It started off tense, then it went from tense into elation and then back to tension. It seemed like QPR were in the lead for a lifetime and it was very dark. He then spoke about the elation when City striker Edin Dzeko equalised, saying, I don't know what happened after that. There was a lot of screaming. He was then asked how he felt when Sergio Aguero won the game. Gallagher said, my mates tried to pull the TV off the wall. I swore a lot, and then I cried like a baby because I've never seen anything like that before. It was mind-blowing.
10 o'clock in the morning, Santiago, Chile. The owner of this bar has agreed to open the bar to let us watch City play QPR. We need a win today to win the league for the first time in 44 years. Well, if we don't win, we don't become champions. I'll be glad I'm 5,000 miles away, so I won't have to be at home and listen to the forward. But anyway, it's kicking off, so...
Still got the audio of that knocking around. There was about 20 minutes of Noel Gallagher eulogising the Man City title win. Five Live the next day, not that I'm bitter, ran it once, I think at 6:20 in the morning. Oh, I was like, on. This is gold.
What are you doing?
This is gold. I think Blue Monday on BBC Manchester gave it his full just outing
well,
as well.
Fair play, BBC Manchester.
What other football one, actually? 2010, I was at the World Cup final. And I saw, I've done some terrible name dropping here.
It's really, really, must be a tough life as a, yeah. as a journalist.
And on the off chance, I can't remember how I knew he was there. I think I knew Noel Gallagher was going. And I got him to agree to do an interview the night before the World Cup final. So I went to his hotel room in Johannesburg and it got him to do Five Live's World Cup preview.
Oh, okay.
It was really extraordinary.
I think I remember hearing that, actually.
And the amazing thing is, he really knows his football.
Oh, he knows his football.
He said the only way Holland will be able to stop Spain is by getting De Jong to do some menacing things. And if you remember, that he should have been sent off for that. The tackle.
Like a chest high tackle or something.
He called it the
and
day.
Noel called it.
Called it the day before. And he really analysed the game well. But no, that is what I love about him, the fact that he is willing to come on air the day before the World Cup final. I also like the fact he's sort of zealous. He'll turn up at the Olympics. Yeah. He'll turn up at the World Cup. I think he's a man who enjoys life.
Well, you know, and I suppose that's the thing as well. He's more, I suppose for him, it's more interesting to talk about something other than Oasis or his latest album. You know, at least if you want, you know, get to talk about football or whatever. And I suppose a lot of people in bands and things, you're not really interested in what they. But he's always going to give something interesting. He's always going to give you something that you can use. And I suppose that's always the thing, I suppose, what you're looking for. If you're going into an interview, you just think, oh, come on, just give me something I can use.
It's strange, actually, because I interviewed him before Christmas for the solo album for BBC Breakfast, and I planned my questions quite carefully. And he came in, he wasn't in a particularly good mood that day.
Really?
I think he had a bit of a cold. And I asked him about four or five fairly open questions about the album, and was getting 5-10 second answers. And I was looking at the PR, and I could see her looking at me thinking, why is he not talking about the album? But then as soon as I got him off the album, he was off and running. When I asked him about turning 50 and how his body felt, he went, feeling pretty good, and no offence, I've still got all this, and rubbed his hair. And I had the surreal moment where he actually bent over, and I was given a full rummage through Noel Gallagher's hair.
Wow.
And it, as I said on screen, it's thorough.
Have you washed your hands since?
And I asked him how he would feel if he ever went bald, and he said he would retire because no one, and I quote, wants a bald Mick Jagger.
That's very true.
So he just went off on one. All these great things, spoke about his hatred of Jeremy Corbyn, which really annoyingly.
Well, that's, once again, that's his. It's quite interesting from being a Labour man in the 90s. You know, I mean, it's a different episode for a different time, but yeah, it's quite interesting. He said some quite right-wing things in the last while. He's talked about terrorism, he's talked about hating Jeremy Corbyn, and it's been a real shift in that politically for him.
Well, it came up because I asked about Glastonbury. I said, oh, you're a man that goes to Glastonbury every year. One of the biggest crowds on the main stage this year was for Jeremy Corbyn. He went, I was the person booing him. I think he said retrogressive policies and a scruffy old donkey, I think was what he said. And really annoyingly, the interview, I cut a long and a short version for Breakfast. If you ever watch BBC Breakfast and there's an interview, you often get the short version in the 6 and 7 hour and the long version in the 8 hour.
Yeah.
Technical thing. And they were overrunning that day and they ran the short one 3 times and it never got out there. I was so annoyed because I was thinking, that I thought that was going to make headlines.
We meet just after the midweek charts have been out and you are heading to number one with the album Who Built the Moon. How much do things like that still matter to you?
Well, I guess it's nice. It's better than being number two, right?
It strikes me as a very joyful album. What's going on?
I guess I was on a voyage of discovery where I hadn't written any of the songs before I went in.
Be Careful What You Wish For on the album is a song about you giving advice to your children. So you've got 3 kids. What's the hardest part of parenting?
The hardest part for me is to be a responsible parent. I'd have a meeting choc ice and chips for breakfast. My daughter, who's 17, is actually, she's brilliant. She's very, very cool. She's not in any way, she's not a problem yet. She did get tattoos without saying anything, which was, I was a bit disappointed in that.
What were they off?
It was all right, because one of them was my face, so it was fine. No, it was they were the brother's initials on her hands, which is kind of a bit of a snidey way of getting it through the back door. I've got these tattoos, and I was like, "That what?" And then she showed me, I was like, oh, it's cute, isn't it? But no more.
The timing of the album has been interesting, coming 1 month after your brother's. What was your reaction when his album went to number one?
Did you send him a message of congratulations?
I did indeed, yes.
Did you?
Yes, I did. No, I didn't. No, no I didn't. No. No, why would I?
One of the big news events of the year was, of course, the Manchester bomb.
It was dreadful. It made me feel so angry and continues to make me feel so angry. It was brutal.
And how did it feel for Don't Look Back in Anger to become such a song of solidarity?
At the time, you know, politicians' words were meaningless, religious leaders' words were meaningless. The people on the experts on the news, whatever they said was meaningless. And that one girl decided she sang that song and the people rallied around that song. And as a songwriter, not even the fact that it's my song, if it was a song, it would have reaffirmed my belief in the power of music and what it means to people.
You turn 50 this year. How are you finding that?
If my 50s are half as good as my 40s, professionally and privately, then I'm going to be doing all right, you know.
Is your body telling you you're 50?
No, 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 I look all right. As long as this is here, no offence, but, you know, as long as this is thriving, which it is, if you can get a close-up of that.
That is thorough.
Yeah.
How would you feel if you went bald?
I don't know what I'd do. I'd definitely retire from music, for sure. You know, but nobody wants to see a bald Mick Jagger, do they?
Well, there you go. You know what you've got to do with it? You've got to sneak these tapes out of the BBC.
Yes.
And then get them onto my podcast. And
Doctor Who videos,
exactly,
isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly, well, we'll do that.
We found a Tom Baker in Nigeria. Yes. One day. When I don't work for the BBC anymore, I'll have to.
Yes, that's it. We'll have to smuggle them all out. But like I said to you off air, it's the, you know, speaking to Matt Whitecross, director of Supersonic, there's an 8-hour cut of Supersonic. There's so much material. And I said, well, Matt, podcast, you know, whether it's mine or whether it's, you know, the production company put something together, people want to hear this stuff and will pay to hear it. And yet it's just content. It's so managed. And yet there's so much good stuff out there.
There are copyright issues, yeah. Sadly, yes. Though. Yes.
That's the unfortunate yes. thing. Colin, thank you so much for your time. I do really appreciate it. It's so good to hear those stories. And
I did some shames. People who are listening to this are thinking I am one of the most shameless name droppers and event droppers in the business.
But no, that's what you're supposed to be. It's we're here to hear the stories. If you said, I've met them a few times, that's not going to be a very interesting episode, is it?
There you go.
So no, I do really appreciate it.
I'll tell you the other ones when you get me back for the difficult second podcast.
There you go. Thank you so much, sir.
For breaking news and the best live sport.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
It's not 5 Live, it's the Oasis podcast, and it is everyone's favourite segment, which is the Oasis A to Z. And we are on to the A's finally. And first up, we have A Bell Will Ring. And the best way to start off, I think, is with the clip from the Don't Believe the Truth documentary that was released, which was very good of the guys to go through and talk about the songs. Obviously, they had this in mind when they recorded this in 2005, that 12, 13 years later, we'd be doing this. So it was good foresight, as always, from Noel and the gang. And yeah, so this is what they said about A Bell Will Ring upon release.
It's really daunting. You know, Noel's written some of the greatest tunes of all time, and Liam is writing some of the greatest tunes of all time, and then suddenly you've got to go, hello! But that's what it's all about, really, and I love it. A little space, a little
time, see you. My favourite lyrics on the album have always been A Bell Will Ring. I think it's an unbelievably positive lyric, and it's a real typical Gem philosophy.
Well, you know. Bell Will Ring. Apparently it's Ringo Starr's favourite track on the album.
I see the two meanings in that. One is the bell will ring, as in something's going to go off, your light's going to go off in your head, and the other one is that Andy Bell may call.
I always get a phone call once every 6 weeks. Someone goes, Andy's trying to get hold of you. And I always think, oh, f***. It's always about nothing. I know, it's Andy. Right, what time is it there? 10 past 5. What are you doing? Nothing. Hey, right, I'm off. Closest anybody has ever got sounding like Revolver, I think, to me.
So, As a Bell Will Ring is quite a simple song. There's not a huge amount going on. One of the things I thought we would do is just talk about suspended chords or sus chords, because it's quite an interesting thing that Oasis do quite a bit, and Gem seems to like as well. So let's talk about suspended chords. So basically, when you play a chord, there's three main notes in the chord, which is called the triad. So here with D, that makes the chord of D. With a suspended chord, what you're doing is you are changing the middle note up or down one. So in a triad, a chord of three, you've got note 1, 3, and 5. Now with a suspended chord, what you're doing is that middle note, you are changing it, either down one to a 1, 2, and 5, or up one. 2, 1, 4, and 5. And that's why a lot of singers and songwriters will do this around D. So they're doing is just fiddling around on D, moving those fingers on and off. And that's a lot of the little bits you hear in songs, is fiddling around with sus chords. And it's just easy to do on D, so... So that's why you tend to hear that quite a bit. So let's talk about a bell will ring. So what we've got in the bell will ring is, here's the first section. Apologies, I'm going to sing it. A little space, a little time, see what it can do. So do you hear that D sus 2 in there? See what it can do. Now, if you play the normal D, let's hear what that sound like. A little space, a little time, see what it can do. So having that rather than that, it just makes it a little bit more rich, a bit more open. See what it can do. I don't know, it makes it more wistful maybe, or hopeful, I'm not sure. It adds a little bit of something in there. And that goes through the song. It uses that D sus 2 throughout. And then we get into the sun will shine on you again element. We then bring in the A sus 2 as well. The sun will shine on you again. A bell will ring inside your head. And all will be brand new. So what we're getting here, we're getting the D sus 2. Sun will shine on you again. Now there's A sus 2. Once again, that's the sus 2. If that was a normal A, we'd be getting the sun will shine on you again. But it's not, it's you again. So it's got that, once again, it's that funny note that just makes it a little bit different. And then we get a bell will ring inside your head. And now we do go back to the normal A, and all will be brand new. And I think it's because then it's a bit brighter and a bit more straightforward to go into to finish the verse, to finish that section off. All will be brand new. And that's in the song itself, and it then kicks in. And that's basically it. I mean, there's not a huge amount else in the song. It just bounces around those chords. So it's very, very simple. But, yeah, but it's a really good use and example of how you're using a sus chord. So that is the difference with that, rather than that, and rather than that. Here endeth the music lesson for today.
So I asked for audio reviews and your thoughts of A Bell Will Ring, and two of you got in touch, which is Rob Nodding and Paul Costello. So over to you guys.
Yeah, Bell Will Ring, for me, just brings back really happy memories of the Paul Lighthouse gig in, I think it was June 2004, maybe a couple of days before they played Glastonbury, sort of one of these warm-up shows. I think it was Zach's first gig with the band, and they played that night at Bell Will Ring and The Meaning of Soul, I think, live for the first time. This was months before the album came out, and I just remember Liam's voice being really high up in the mix, and you can hear it. I think there's a bootleg out there. A little space, a little time, see what you can do. A little faith, peace of mind, see what you can do. The sun will shine on you. And he really just sort of attacked the vocals on Bell Will Ring. And yeah, he sort of butchered it a bit and messed the lyrics up and apologised afterwards. But it just sort of stuck in my head that night, and I couldn't wait for the album to come out just to hear that song. Also, quite like the demo version, there's a bit for the third verse where Liam's vocal, the effect on his vocal changes a bit, and it just sounds quite good. There's also, if you watch the Lord Don't Slow Me Down City of Manchester gig, you'll see what I mean. But on when they played this song live, they played on the screens behind the band playing it in rehearsals. So they had the band playing it live and on the screens the band playing it in rehearsals, and it was never quite in sync, and just, I don't know, it just seemed like a weird thing to put up on the screens. There's a great version out there. I think it was the Boston gig that year where Noel just throws in some really nice harmonies. Just sounds great. I always thought it was a good live song. I thought it suited Liam's voice really well. And yeah, for me, just brings back just really, really good memories of that gig down in Poole in 2004.
Hey James, it's Paul. Hopefully you're keeping well. I just wanted to drop you a message on A Bell Will Ring. I was going to write to you on Twitter, but I can't condense it down into 140 characters or whatever Twitter lets you do these days. But before that, I just wanted to briefly go back to the previous song you reviewed, You've Got the Heart of a Star. And a few episodes before that one, you had a guest on and you were going through Noel's Desert Island Discs, and one of the songs he had included on that was a Pink Floyd song from The Wall. And I'm not too sure if it was you or the guest you had on said, you know, that there wasn't really much of a Pink Floyd influence on Oasis. And when I was just listening through to the review of You've Got the Heart of a Star, it sort of did hit me that song actually does have a bit of a Pink Floyd vibe to me anyway, with the keyboards, and I think there might be some brass, just the way they sort of drone away there in the background behind the chords and the vocal, to me has a bit of a Pink Floyd sound to it. But anyway, moving on to A Bell Will Ring, I have to say it wouldn't be, on my first glance, one of the tracks that would stand out from Don't Believe the Truth. And I thought the album as a whole was a pretty good album, especially compared to the previous two that came before. I sort of thought it was a bit of return to form and things were a bit fresh with Andy and Gem on board and Liam contributing more as well. But, you know, I probably would have given the song a 2, but I have to say, after listening back a couple of times before I decided to give you a message, I'd probably up that to a 3 at least. It's not a bad song at all. I really like the guitar intro. I think that's a really good guitar line. My suspicion is, although I could be wrong, that it's not Noel playing that guitar part. I would imagine it's Andy or Gem, because I just don't think it sounds like Noel's sort of style of playing. But I could be wrong, like I say, but that's just what it sounds like to me. And it's a very Beatles-y tone, and Liam's vocal sounds great, and then when the full band kick in, it just takes off. Great drum beat, and I mean, it's a pretty straightforward song. The verses and choruses flow from one to the other, and there's no solo as such, and it just sort of chugs along nicely. Nice lyrics. I really like the backing vocals that come in. They're really subtle. They come in on the, I think it's the end of the last verse and into the last chorus. They're pretty low in the mix, but they're very nice. And interestingly too, when I was listening back, I noticed that the bass part is playing one note the whole way through the song. It's in F sharp, so I think it's just playing that F sharp all the way through. And I looked up some live videos and it seemed to be pretty much the similar. So that's probably something worth noting, that there's just one note on the bass right through the song. But to me, it's... I have to say, on reflection, it's a better song than I would have thought. But like I say, it's probably a solid 3 from me, from Gem. And I suppose thinking back, and I think they do mention it on the DVD that comes with the album. I mean, it was their first proper album on board with the band for both Andy and Gem. So for them to sort of step forward and say, well, look, lads, we've got some songs here too. It must have been a pretty big thing for them. And good that Noel was open to it, because like I say, I think Don't Believe the Truth overall is a pretty good album. Probably not my favourite Oasis album, but it's definitely one of the better ones, I think. Anyway, I'll pause now, but thanks for the podcast. Keep it all going, and all the best. Talk again soon.
So thanks very much to Paul and Rob. Really insightful stuff. So as always when we do this, let's have a look at your guys' comments. I put it out there on Twitter, and we asked for your views on A Bell Will Ring. We voted on it, as always, and how did it turn out? We got a 5 out of 5 got 12%, 4 got 28%, 3 got 42%, and 2 got 18%. And so overall, that meant it got 3.3. So it goes into fourth place behind It's Good to Be Free, I Got the Fever, You Got the Heart of a Star, and then it's ahead of Cigarettes in Hell, Probably All in the Mind, and Get Off Your High Horse, Lady. And your comments were Richard Bowes, cracking tune. One of a handful of times Oasis properly sounded like the Beatles. It could have been a Revolver. Kevin Smith said, a guy I knew, Big Dave, loved this song. Used to sing it all the time. Said he could really relate to the lyrics. Not seen him in years. I hope he listens. Hello, Big Dave, if you're listening. Everyone knows a Big Dave. Gary, who's at Gazza F83, gave it a 1.8. out of 5, not having that, you've got to just go with 2 or 1.
Luke Herding said, I like the song, gave it a 4. Nice little riff. Lyrics are strong and it suits Liam's voice. Love the moment where everything kicks in after the first chorus. For me, it's Gem's best song in Oasis. Neil D, who is at Musical Pedro, said, debut performance at Paul Lighthouse, then at Glastonbury 05, and band wouldn't allow it to be on the Broad TV broadcast. An error, in my view. Cool Gem tune. But it was Glastonbury 2004. Neil then did point that out. David Walker said, I'd give it a 2. Think the guitar riff is cool. It's okay. But never really got that into it. But good album track. Susie Bloor said, a truly underrated track from both a lyric and guitar riff point of view. A fully biased heavy stereo fan. O'Shasis, who is at mybigmouth_SOS, said, Oasis doing Revolver. Great track. Cool demo too. It was Ringo's favourite tune on the album as well. I love Gem's tunes. He definitely brought something more to the band. I like the way him and Liam used to write together. Could have developed over time and been really good. Drew Gross says, top notch. Nick, who is at Oasisography, said, one of the better Gem tunes, but for me it's just not Oasis and definitely one I would normally skip over. Grandpa Batman said, I gave it a 2 because I like Gem putting a solid effort in to contribute to the songwriting. The song never seemed to bridge over very well live, in my opinion. Just seemed to lack the passion and drive of the anthems. A good tune to go get a beer or take a piss to. Nice, thanks. King_Monkey at White Hart Lad said, a decent little number, one of my faves off the album. Benjamin Nib, never really thought a great deal about it until I saw it played live at the Etihad, then the City of Manchester Stadium. Liam nailed it. Chris Park, who is at Park1_Chris, Ringo Starr's favourite song on the album, according to Gem, if my memory serves me right. Don't Believe the Truth had a great DVD that came with it. Very true. Dan Best, first listen in a while. Sorry, doesn't make those little hairs on the back of my head stand up. Do remember it coming on in a TGI Fridays in Orlando back in 2005 and thinking this couldn't be any more random. Joe Ryan 01, succinct to the point, album filler. Jim Regan, who is at JBone72, I was just listening to Don't Believe the Truth on vinyl other night and forgot how much I liked it overall, and this tune was one that stuck out, particularly the drums. Cheers, Zach. Kenny Boy Neil says, seen them do it live on the Noise and Confusion tour at the Apollo. It's B-side level at most. And then Che UK said, who's at LDN Che, said, yeah, it's a pretty dire tune. Amy F. Spot, who is at Vivian70, said, it's a bit Beatley and a bit sitar-y, and it's optimistic as well. Liam does a great job, and damn it, I really want to go for 3.5, but with respect to the algorithms, I'm going 4. There's a nod to something else in there too at the beginning of the melody, maybe a country song. Don't know about that. If anyone can spot the country song, then let us know. I've All I Need, who is at Supernova Dragon, a decent tune, but I always forget about it due to it being surrounded by tracks such as Keep the Dream Alive and Love Like a Bomb, both of which remind me of this song. I don't know why, so I went for 3. Fraser McCallum, I like this tune, it reminds me of The Who for some reason. Misk Twit, who is at Colin_Dobson_SF, 3, above average. Oasis does Revolver. If you like Oasis and Revolver, then you cannot dislike it. Sonic equivalent of marmalade on toast. I like that. MCFC_shirts. It's Gem trying his hardest to write a track that could have been on Revolver. The whole of the album is a letdown for me. And Sean, who is at Universal Gleam 3. My least favourite Oasis album due to Noel's Stranglers and Velvet Underground ripoffs. A Bell Will Ring is one of my faves on there, though, to be honest. Keep the Dream Alive too. Such a mishmash album, though. Liam's stuff on it is good. Books and Guitars says, arguably the most Oasis song not written by Noel in my view. Great tune and perfect for Liam's voice. Boy About Town, top tune, Gem on a Revolver trip. Well, I loved it. Later pinched it on Find the Torch / Burn the Plans. I don't know that. Jordan Ross, who is at Urban Glory BP. Revolver was the main outside influence on the recording of Don't Believe the Truth, and this one's very much got that she said feel. Adds nicely to the vibe of the album without setting the world on fire. Jacopo Lagomarsino gave it 5 out of 5. For me, love most of Gem's songs. Check out the Boston Tweeter Center version. Awful atmosphere in the audience that night, but the band was on top form. Kim Murray gave it 4 out of 5. And Chris Tompkins, who's at Tomo Hove, said, love this song. Liam's vocal on this is biblical. Hugely underrated for me. 5 out of 5. So, brilliant. Thank you all so much for your comments. But the one thing that is really good about it, as was mentioned there by a couple of people, it does have that demo version, Now, we don't often get a demo version with Oasis tracks, so yeah, let's just give you a little bit of the demo version. So, lyrically, what are we talking about here? Well, as we know, Gem's written it, and it goes, a little space, a little time, see what it can do, a little faith, peace of mind, see what passes through. So that, to me, is just take a bit of time, chill out, and meditate, or relax, and see what, you know, see what happens. The sun will shine on you again, a bell will ring inside your head, and all will be brand new. So yeah, once again, it's like, take your time, relax, refresh the batteries, and then and then maybe you'll come out of it refreshed and feeling better. Come alive, come on in, something that you know. The world's as wide as your life is thin, so entertain your goals. Okay. Come alive, come on in, something that you know. The world's as wide as your life is thin, so entertain your goals. Okay. I don't really like this. It's kind of just a bit sort of self-help mumbo jumbo to me. I'm not a big fan. The sun will shine on you again, a bell will ring inside your head, and all will be brand new. I can tell you what you want to hear. I've been there once before. You brought me through the empty nights, sleepless on the floor. So that, I prefer that, actually. That's then more like a message to someone, isn't it? That it's, if it's a message to an individual, that he sort of sat there struggling with something, struggling to find his place in the universe maybe, and this is sort of someone's helped him through it. So that I do like. I do prefer that line. And just the general tone on it, I think it's positive, it's nice. A bell will ring inside your head. It's like the idea that, yes, this will, something will come to you, you'll get this peace of mind. So, yeah, fine. Lyrically, it's fine, as we said. Come alive, come on. So let's think about the recording and stuff. So the Don't Believe the Truth album was recorded November 2004 to March 2005. It was in Metropolis Studios, Olympic Studios, Strangeway Studios and Wheeler End Studios, plus the Capitol Studios in the Village, Los Angeles. They did originally start working with the Death in Vegas guys. So the plan was to release the album in summer, autumn 2004, and they did a sort of a 3 to 4 week session with Death in Vegas after Alan White had left in sort of January 2004 at Sawmill Studios back in Cornwall. Although Noel wasn't happy with the results, he said, "Unfortunately, after the recording process, we decided we didn't like anything we'd played or recorded during those 3 weeks. And because of commitments with Death in Vegas, Richard Fearless and Tim Holmes couldn't find any more time to give to the project." So apparently they were working on around about 10 different songs. And four of those did end up on the album finally, and A Bell Will Ring was one of them. And so they did end up, so it was definitely worked on back then by the Death in Vegas guys. So they then sort of reconvened at Wheeler End Studios. Noel was the producer, nominally. And that's where, in June 2004, then, as I say, the song was played in Poole and then at Glastonbury. And so Dave Sardy then came in, and from sort of 2004, November 2004, spent around 9 weeks in Capitol Studios, and that's where it was sort of finished off. On the album, it is track number 10. It sits near the end of the album, so it's after Keep the Dream Alive, and then A Bell Will Ring, and then it ends on Let There Be Love. So it's kind of the last kind of upbeat, rocking one before then Let There Be Love's a bit more chilled out sort of end to the album. And once again, you know, on Oasis albums, you don't tend to get the very clear credits. You just kind of get the overall credit for the album. You have to kind of piece it together and figure out who did what. So Noel is credited as lead guitar, Liam's credited as lead vocals, Andy Bell's credited as bass, rhythm and acoustic guitar, Gem is credited as rhythm guitar, lead guitar, bass guitar, keyboards and harmonica, and Zach Starkey on drums and percussion. And there's no one else credited as doing anything else. So Strange Boy, Paul Stacey, does play piano and mellotron on Let There Be Love. Terry Kirkbride comes in and does drums on Mucky Fingers. But it's, so it's just the typical band playing through that. And we don't know whether, you know, it's potentially Gem playing the lead guitar riff on that. You would think so, as it's his song, so it's likely to be, but I'm not sure. Looking at the live video of them playing A Bell Will Ring, it looks like it is Gem playing the lead guitar line. And as we always talk about in this, you know, is it right for it to be an album track? I mean, it's a tricky one when you look at Don't Believe the Truth. I quite like its place near the end of the album, actually. I mean, it could have been an opener. I do like Turn Up the Sun as an opener. Potentially like a start of side two sort of song, maybe. But I think Where It is fine. Part of the cue, Keep the Dream Alive, A Bell Will Ring, and then Let There Be Love is a nice way to finish off the album. And in terms of like other tracks that were around at the time, could it have been a B-side, or could it? I don't think it should have been a single. Definitely not. You know, I think we're happy with the singles from that album. I think what was it, Lila, Importance of Being Idle, and Let There Be Love. I think maybe Turn Up the Sun could have been a single. I think that would have been a good one to be a single, but I don't think A Bell Will Ring would have been a great single. Other B-sides around that time, you had Eyeball Tickler, Pass Me Down the Wine, Sitting Here in Silence on My Own. There was also the bonus track, Can You See It Now? I Can See It Now. I don't think any of those I particularly would have promoted to the album over A Bell Will Ring. So I think Where It Sits actually is about right. There was also obviously Won't Let You Down, Pass Me Down the Wine, and The Quiet Ones. So no, I think it is stronger than all those other B-sides, because it wasn't particularly the strongest set of B-sides around that time. So no, I think A Bell Will Ring, I think, you know, it's a rare occasion where we think Oasis actually got it right with their track listing, sitting where it does on the album. So there we go. Well done, Gem Archer. Good song. A worthy Oasis song, in my opinion. Not one of the best, but certainly it's not one I skip. It's one that it comes on, I'm happy to listen to it. It's a nice, happy piece of Oasis rock and roll. Liam's vocal, I don't think, is the strongest around that time. I think his voice is a bit cracked around that time. He's sort of leaning into his raspiness quite a lot in that album, I think. And you know, when you hear how he's kind of come back now, he's getting away from the raspiness and a bit more. You listen to something like For What It's Worth, Paper Crown, it's a bit trying to get back to the pre kind of raspiness Liam, which I think is where his voice sits the best. Well, his voice was the best on Be Here Now or Morning Glory. I think everyone sort of accepts that. But anyway, yeah, so there we go. That's all we've got to say about A Bell Will Ring. Next up on Oasis A to Z, possibly the worst Oasis song released, which is A Quick Peep. So we'll see. That will be exciting. If you would like to discuss A Quick Peep, actually Michael Hart has put his head above the parapet and said he'd be happy to come on and discuss it, but he's been on quite a bit, so he's more than welcome to. But if anyone else has a particular desire to discuss A Quick Peep, then please let me know, because I honestly don't think I can talk about that song very much by myself. It just remains for me to say thank you so much for listening to the Oasis podcast. But as always, the most special thanks go to our fantastic patrons: Cindy, Andrew, Simon, Remy, Jim, Richard, Amy, Mark, Dana, Mike, Fraser, David, Jeff, Davey, Jason, David,
Casey, Dan and Alex. You guys are brilliant. And if you'd like to become a patron from as little as $1 a month, you can get exclusive content, interviews being posted early, and all kinds of amazing things that will make all your dreams come true. So follow me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. Email me at oasispod@gmail.com. You can get t-shirts and other merch at TeePublic, and please subscribe and review on iTunes. And we've had another review on the American iTunes site, which was from JW Lennon 65, and he says, "Great, been a fan of Oasis since 94. It's the music that drove my youth. It's nice to hear people that love the band as much as you do discuss them. Just discovered the podcast a little bit ago and love it." So great, thank you so much, JW Lennon 65. So until next time, as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Sorry, but Jay-Z? No, I'm not having hip-hop at Glastonbury. No, hang on.